Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Good morning. This is Faith Radio Mornings for this, not just any regular Tuesday, it is Giving Tuesday. I'm Paul Perreault, filling in for Peter Kapsner, and maybe you've heard of me talking about, and us talking about Giving Tuesday, because it's kind of a special day. We just got off of all the big shopping with Black Friday, Small Business Saturday, Cyber Monday. Now it's Giving Tuesday, and maybe you're wondering, where in the world did Giving Tuesday come from? It's not that old, actually. It started in 2012. By the 92nd Street Y in New York with the United Nations Foundation. They introduced the idea, hoping that after several days of big shopping events, follow all that up with a single day of giving thanks and giving back. So, great idea. Maybe you want to be part of it, whether it's giving to your church, giving to any number of ministries, missions organizations, Faith Radio, do it. Yeah, do something to give back to others. After all, we did spend a lot of time shopping the last few days, except for, I guess, sedans. If you heard yesterday, GM is going to be closing down some factories. They're discontinuing a lot of their vehicles, mainly the sedans. I guess sedans right now, people are not buying sedans like they used to. It's all these crossovers and SUVs, even the small ones, and so GM is figuring, well, we have these factories that are building just that, like the Chevy Cruze. The Impala, which has been around for eons, is going to be disappearing in the near future. There won't be any new Impalas, so big changes. But then again, our buying habits when it comes to cars have changed as well. Well, we're going to get in with some of our guests today. Coming up in just a moment, we have Tommy Binion. He's from the Heritage Foundation and the Daily Signal. He's our usual Tuesday Washington update guy. We'll be getting to him in just a few moments. This is Faith Radio Mornings again for Giving Tuesday. Thank you for listening.
I'm just a bill, yes, I'm only a bill, and I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the capital city.
Taking me back to my growing up days, watching Saturday morning TV, ABC, they had Schoolhouse Rock, I'm just a bill. I'm getting old, Tommy, I tell you, I'm getting old. Tommy Binion joining us from the Heritage Foundation. How are you doing today?
I'm fine, but it's not just you, we're all getting old.
True enough. I was just talking about GM and the fact that, you know, like the Impala that's been around for eons and that's going to be disappearing. Not that I'm a GM guy. I've never really been a GM guy. I don't know about you. Were you a GM kid growing up?
A Chevrolet.
You like Chevys?
Well, I like Chevys. I drive a Chevy. My wife drives a Chevy. Always have.
But are you driving a Chevy sedan?
No.
Well, what are you driving?
A pickup.
Pickup, okay, there you go. See, that's why they're making the changes. I mean, I can figure it because, okay, next week you won't be with us because you and your wife are having, which child is this, number two?
Number two, yep.
Number two.
Little boy.
And the reason you don't get the sedan, how do you fit those car seats in a Chevy Cruze?
You can't do it.
It's
and when you try to imagine two car seats, a dog, a bunch of luggage.
Exactly.
All the gear that comes with kids these days, it's impossible.
That's why you need the crossover at least. Anyway, thanks for joining us this morning. A busy morning in the news as you give us our usual Washington watch, but that oftentimes goes outside of Washington like it is. I wanted to start out, I know we didn't talk about this beforehand, but Mississippi, it's a big day down there for their runoff for their Senate election between Cindy Hyde-Smith and Mike Espy. Now, what's at stake down there, Tommy?
Well, a Senate seat is
well, yeah,
and it's closer than most people thought it was going to be. There were multiple candidates in the initial election. None of them got above the requisite percentage to avoid a runoff. So there's a runoff scheduled for today. You know, it is a lot closer than folks have expected. There have been some comments made by the Republican senator, Cindy Hyde-Smith, that I believe have been taken out of context. She's been accused of all manners of things that I don't think are true. But there's a lot of identity politics, a lot of racial politics going on down there. The president was at a rally in Biloxi last night. I think that he was there to, do what he did successfully in the midterm elections, which is stir up the Republican base on behalf of Republican Senate candidates. So in the end, I think Hyde-Smith will win, but it was a closer election than many predicted.
You were talking about Donald Trump. Yes, he was there and very fiery.
I need the great people of Mississippi to send a message to crying Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, Maxine Waters, the radical Democrats, by electing Cindy.
Okay, now we were talking about what's at stake here, and you said a Senate seat. Now, the Republicans already have a majority in the Senate with 52. Would that extra seat help that much in the Republican policies?
I absolutely it would. It's breathing room. It's when you're considering a close policy like the vote on Obamacare repeal a year and a half ago, something like that. An extra senator is breathing room for the Republican majority to be able to lose one, two, or three votes and still be able to carry it out, to be able to confirm the president's nominees. You know, Mitch McConnell often jokes here in Washington that if somebody catches a cold, business in the Senate has to stop because they have such a slim margin. So having a bigger margin makes life a lot easier in the Senate, and it makes a lot more policies possible in the Senate because of this.
Let's get back to the Senate race and the comments that Cindy Hyde-Smith made. I mean, you're saying they may be taken out of context. I look at a lot of those, and I'm kind of going, does she understand who she's representing? I mean, I was a little taken aback by some of that stuff myself.
Well, you know, I haven't heard everything that she said. You know, there is one that she said something like, I would come to a public hanging if you asked me to sit next to you or something, and it was construed to be racial. I just didn't take it that way. I know how politics can make somebody's comments seem much worse than they are. If there's something that I don't know about, you'll have to remind me.
Well, that's the main one I'm thinking about. There's that and the Confederate hat she was wearing. It's like, does she understand what those symbolize to a lot of people? There's some deep-seated memories in a lot of people what happened in the past in the South.
Yeah, I completely understand that. And I just don't think that she meant to stoke racial tensions.
I don't think she did either,
that's
bud.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. Meanwhile, since we're talking – oh, go ahead. Finish that.
I was just going to say, I think we should take people at their word. What did you mean by that? If she meant to stoke racial tensions, that's one thing. But certainly I don't think she did, and I think we can forgive her for that.
I would hope we can, but I think hopefully she's learned a bit from this as well. Meanwhile, though, you know, there was a good article that Star Parker did that was at the Daily Signal, a part of Heritage, and she's from Urban Cure, and she was writing about the Florida race and some of the issues around that, where race was trying to be stoked, but it wasn't by the not by the Republicans, they're not hopefully not trying to, but it was the issue was trying to be used, and it didn't work.
That's exactly right. Look, this is a tactic that the left uses. I refer to it as identity politics, and it is a tactic that seeks to divide us. It seeks to say that because you are one race or one gender, you must think this way, and you must be offended by, in large part, you must be offended by Republicans. They did a similar thing to Ron DeSantis, although I think even worse. Than what happened in Mississippi. You know, they took everything he said to be having to do with race, and they twisted his words and they used it against him, and it was a month of, you know, accusing Ron DeSantis with no basis of being a racist. And the point is not to say that Ron DeSantis is a racist. He's most certainly not, and they knew that. The point was to stoke a racial divide. And I think that that is the ends do not justify the means. If we're going to have a racial divide in this country, no governorship or Senate seat is worth that, in my opinion.
I would agree with you there. It's 15 after the hour. When we come back, I want to talk about things that have been happening down at the southern border. It was a busy weekend while we were still getting over our turkey hangovers. There was some activity down along the border between California and Mexico near Tijuana. I want to cover with Tommy. So we're listening to Faith Radio Mornings. Thanks for tuning in. Eighteen after the hour, Faith Radio Mornings, Paul in for Peter Kapsner, and Tommy Binion, our guest from the Heritage Foundation. Tommy, I forgot to ask, I don't know if Peter asked you before, but with your baby coming next week, do you know if it's a boy or a girl?
It's a boy. We have one boy, and we're expecting another.
Oh, I'm sure your wife is kind of, well, come on, parody here, come on.
You know, she grew up with three brothers.
Oh, okay. She's used to it then.
I think that she's okay so far.
Okay, that's good to know. Well, anyway, getting back to the news here, and over the weekend, a situation happened where members of a migrant caravan in near Tijuana, frustrated by lack of food and other basic necessities, were protesting. Things got out of hand with Mexican authorities. Some of the migrants tried to run the U.S. Toward the U.S. border, only to be repelled by U.S. Customs and Border Authorities, who used tear gas on them. Now, I admit, personally, I was kind of horrified to see tear gas used on families with children, but there's so much going on down there. What can you tell us about what's currently at play down on the border?
Well, there's two horrifying images that come out of this, and you're absolutely right. That is uncomfortable to see children in such a dangerous situation. I regret that those children were there in the first place, but certainly it broke my heart. But there is another, I think, really a visceral image coming from this, and that is the image of hundreds of migrants carrying the flag from their home country running at our southern border. We're being told that not to worry about this, that these are peaceful individuals just looking for a better life, and that they're seeking asylum because they are running from terrible conditions in their home country, but they're carrying the flag of their home country as they try to crash our border. Those two things don't match up. And I think that the response from Americans is one of frustration that this is what's happening, on that we don't have control. We are a global superpower, and we don't have control of our very own border. It's maddening.
It is. And there's been an issue, too, with the Mexican government now. They're kind of in transition down there, aren't they?
Right. They'll have a new president at the end of this week, December the 1st. And there was a story that the Trump administration and the incoming Mexican president had agreed, while these individuals in the caravan and while all migrants, for that matter, await their asylum hearing, they'll stay in Mexico. Now, that is good because most folks awaiting a hearing don't ever show up to their hearing, and they're in the interior of the country and they become illegal immigrants. So it would be better if they would wait outside for their asylum hearing. That was the deal that was announced. Then the incoming Mexican president said that that wasn't the deal, and so we really don't know what the state of affairs is, but it is a very interesting situation. Certainly, the USA has a lot of leverage over Mexico. You would think that this would be the kind of thing that they would cooperate with, but I think that those details have yet to fall into place.
Now, Trump has been talking about – now, there was briefly the San Ysidro border crossing was closed for a while over the weekend because of the situation. Then it was reopened. But now the president is threatening to close all of the southern border, if I heard correctly. Is that right?
Yeah, and somewhat permanently. I think that what the president is trying to project is just how serious – he is, and by extension, the United States of America is about securing our southern border. Nobody should be mistaken about this. It is not secure currently. And this president intends to secure it. If that means he has to close it, I think he'll do that. Now, that's happened several times in the history of the United States, under Reagan, under Carter, under Reagan, under Nixon, and under President Johnson. Now, he could do that again. What's even more interesting is that Homeland Security funding, Homeland Security appropriations, they expire at the end of the next week. And so the Congress is actually going to rewrite a bill to fund the southern border. With all this going down on the southern border, that's the context in which the Congress is going to be writing this bill. Again, it expires next Friday, so there's a bit of a budget showdown having to do with this as well.
Okay, now you're bringing in the legislature here, so let's talk about that. I mean, what's the likelihood it'll be passed quickly? What resistance? Well, obviously we know some resistances, but what do you think is going to happen in that regard?
Well, the Republicans want more funding for the southern border. Sometimes it's couched as Trump's wall, but the truth is what they're asking for is just more border security funding, and it's obvious if you look at the news that it is needed. The Democrats want no more border security funding, and they want to block the president from having any victories. That's a showdown. You can't pass an appropriations bill without both parties, or at least some from both parties, consenting to it, and you need the president's signature as well. So what are those two camps going to agree on? What will the compromise be? You asked, will it happen quickly? I think almost certainly not. This will be an 11th-hour negotiation. If it isn't a 13th or 14th hour negotiation, we'll see. They could extend government funding beyond December the 7th, or there could be – now, we've already passed most of government funding, so there won't be a shutdown. But there could be a few agencies that have a lapse in appropriations temporarily.
Okay. We only have a couple more minutes left. It's 24 after the hour. And, Tommy, over the weekend, it was actually interesting. Let me back up. Before Thanksgiving, on November 21st, one of your associates, Nolan Peterson at Heritage, wrote an article about the tensions that were simmering below the surface between Russia and Ukraine and what happened over the weekend. Things started to boil over with Russian forces attacking and capturing some Ukrainian naval vessels. Now, how has the U.S. response been so far?
Well, Nikki Haley called for a UN Security Council meeting. They met yesterday, and she had strong words for the Russian government. She rebuked their actions. She explained that we can never have normal relations as long as they are participating in these outlaw actions, she called them. And this is the problem with Russia, is their level of aggression. She called on our European allies to be at the forefront of confronting this problem. Now we'll see if any of that stuck, if any of that changes anything. But that is the current status. Russia captured these Ukrainian ships. Indeed, there's been a conflict with Ukraine, as you mentioned, for 4 or 5 years now. Captured these ships, and I think that the international response, led by Nikki Haley, was strong in its rebuke of the Russian government.
Any word on what Congress is thinking, since you deal mainly with Congress?
Yeah, Congress often talks about foreign affairs, but it very, very seldom acts on foreign affairs, almost never. Occasionally, it's required that that Congress pass sanctions, or occasionally they'll pass a resolution. But members on both sides of the aisle often say Congress must get involved in foreign affairs. We must be a check to the president. But it so rarely acts on those things. So I'm sure that there are comments from a few members on the situation in Ukraine, but I can't foresee any action here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we've been talking with Tommy Binion from the Heritage Foundation. Tommy, again, next week you'll be off, but I hope all goes well with you and your wife and your newborn. But blessings on you.
Thank you very much, and I'll look forward to being back with you in 2 weeks.
Sounds good. This is Faith Radio Mornings. Ken Davis coming up in just a moment.
You're a rotter, Mr. Grinch. You're the king of sinful sots.
Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Paul Perreault, filling in for Peter Kapsner. Yesterday I saw in my email, I get these things from Wallet Hub, their surveys, and they had 2019's most sinful cities. Of course, number one is Las Vegas, followed by Los Angeles, New York. Chicago is up there in the top 10. Now, as far as least sinful cities, I guess our Faith Radio city of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, can celebrate because they were toward the bottom of the list of 182. They were at 176. The most sinless city on the list, South Burlington, Vermont. Must be a really nice place. I'll have to check it out. Anyway, this is Faith Radio Mornings.
Sauerkraut and toadstool sandwich. With arsenic sauce.
Twenty-five before the hour. This is Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Paul Perreault, filling in for Peter Kapsner. And yesterday I had a chance to talk with Dr. Linda Mintel, and she recently went through, this past week as a matter of fact, the death of her dad. But she talked about dying well with that recent death, about her father, who was excited to see eternity, which he did last week.
All the songs that we were singing, Victory in Jesus, I've Got a Mansion Over the Hilltop. It was funny because I hadn't sung those songs much since I was a kid in church. Boy, they came back and he started loudly singing and he was helping me. He said at one point, I can't start them, but once you get going, I can certainly sing them. So we just had a great time praising God and having a worship service and celebrating the Lord. So I tell you what, if you're going to lose somebody on this earth, this is the way. There's great hope. And anybody who's doubting, you know, sometimes in our culture, we wonder sometimes, is there really an afterlife? Is this all real? Is heaven real? Is there really a God? And I tell you, if you were in that room, there would have been no doubt of the realm that he was entering and what he was seeing. So it was just such a strengthening of my faith. And he gave me the courage that you can face death and you can be okay. So what a great witness and testimony of his life in dying.
If you missed that episode, you missed that conversation with Linda Mintel, please go to our website, myfaithradio.com, and under the Faith Radio Morning Show page, you'll find the podcast. Well worth your time, I guarantee it. This is Faith Radio Mornings.
How do you get to the point that you delight in God's Word? By rediscovering the joy of your salvation. This is Jim Garland. What is the joy of your salvation? The joy of your salvation is remembering what you've really been saved from and forgiven for, and enjoying the intimacy God has for you. All that junk in the past is forgiven. I don't care who you are, or if you consider yourself the worst sinner in the world. Your sin is forgiven if you ask the Lord and mean it. With a truth like that, how could you not be joyful? The result is a place reserved for you in His heaven, a place where all tears will be wiped away, and we'll enjoy eternal fellowship with Him and one another. So if you happen to forget your reason for joyfulness, stop and meditate on the wonder of God's grace and mercy. There's more on this at jimgarlow.com.
Two before the hour. This is Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Paul Perreault, filling in for Peter Kapsner. Joining me on the line right now from Texas is George Yancey. He's a sociology professor from the University of North Texas. George, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Good to have you along. Now, the reason I'm having you on, you recently wrote a book. We'll get to that in a moment here about prejudice in the press, and I'm kind of going, okay. Especially after this election cycle, you know, we have this aspiration in America. The news industry is supposed to cover the news factually, dispassionately, truthfully, but it hasn't been living up to those aspirations. And we wonder, because of the 24/7 news cycle, highly competitive coverage from the various news outlets trying to cater to a niche consumer, social media seems to be driving things. Many times it seems like the news industry is becoming the news. And then this morning I'm paging through my information and what's the top word? What is the word of the year, according to dictionary.com? The word misinformation. What is your response to all this?
No, that's the first I've heard of that. Well, definitely there's a lot of misinformation out there. Some of it is from very partisan news sources. I would say it's less so from more mainstream news sources, but they definitely are not exempt from sometimes creating and passing along misinformation as well. But, yeah, I've not heard that story.
Yeah, it's brand new.
The word of the year, yeah.
That came out. Actually, let's back up. Now, George, you've done a lot of research in the areas of academic bias and prejudice, especially anti-religious hostility. Give us a quick summary of what you were doing in those studies and what you found.
Yeah, I recently did a study, research study on academia, and I found, you know, I expected there would be a bias, but I thought it would be more political than religious. It was the other way around. There was an political conservative bias, but the anti-conservative Protestant bias was stronger, notably stronger. And the way I did my research, I looked at the willingness to hire someone, and there's a lot less willingness to hire someone if they found out they were conservative Protestant, be fundamentalist or evangelical.
Okay.
And then I brought my research to look at Christianophobia or anti-Christian attitudes in our country as a whole, and I use a probability survey and some qualitative work. And, I think it's the first national study on anti-Christian attitudes, so there's a lot of takeaways. Perhaps what I think is maybe the most important takeaway, which leads me to wanting to look at the media, is that the people who are more likely to have hostility towards Christians tend to be white, male, highly educated, wealthy, progressive, and secular, which I think describes a lot of what I'll call the cultural creators, people in academia and in the media. So that's kind of led me to wonder if this phenomenon also occurs in the media. I wanted to study other types of biases as well. And so, you know, we also looked at racial bias, potential racial bias and gender bias and sexual identity bias. But that's what sort of led me to wanting to look at the media to see whether or not there was biases there as well.
Okay, so now we're getting to Prejudice in the Press, which is your latest book, investigating bias in coverage of race, gender, sexuality, and religion that you and your co-author, Alicia Brunson, worked on and wrote. Now, you kind of gave us already why you felt compelled to do that. Now, without getting too technical, how did you come at this? What was your methodology in coming up with this book?
Sure. All right. Imagine it this way. Imagine that you're a newspaper reporter editor and you get a story. Let's say you get a story of a robbery at an airport. Do you run that story, and what angle do you run that story? Well, what if the robber was white and the victim was black? Would the story would be different if it was the other way around? The robber was I forgot how I say it now. The robber was black and the victim was white. So those are scenarios. And what we did was we created 11 scenarios like that, and we gave half of them in this particular scenario where the robber was white and the victim was black, and half were the other way around. And 11 scenarios, we switched a characteristic and gave half to one to half our sample and half the other half our sample. And what we were looking for was because our sample was reporters and editors at newspapers mostly, but at a few other media outlets. Would their propensity to run the story differ because of the characteristics? And secondly, would they treat the story differently? Because we use a follow-up question, you know, what is about the story that's important as to why you're going to run it or not and where you're going to run it?
Okay, so you go ahead.
I hope that's not too technical.
No, that actually helps out quite a bit. You're kind of laying out the framework. You put these various scenarios to the test.
Yes.
Okay, and sure. How willing were people in the media to work with you on this?
Well, our response rate was really highest for the newspaper media. I mean, we tried to do it with the social media and the broadcast. We got some response. Our response rate for the newspaper media was, I'll have to go back and look, I think it was around 20%, which, you know, is not the greatest, but it's probably par for when you try to survey busy professionals, you know, who feel like they don't have time for this sort of stuff. I feel pretty good about, we had some data that we could use to weigh at least the newspaper media personnel. So I feel pretty good about our results, but of course, you know, hopefully there'll be future research that will improve upon what we're doing.
You said you weren't getting much from the, shall we say, the cable news guys or stuff like that, right?
Yeah, the television media and social media didn't respond back as readily as the newspaper media.
Maybe because
and I don't know why that is. It just happened. It just was the way it was.
Okay. We're talking with George Yancey. He's a professor of sociology at the University of North Texas. When we come back, I want to dig into some of the actual findings you had when you ran some of those scenarios. So stay with us. This is Faith Radio Mornings. Thirteen before the hour, Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Paul, and my guest this segment is George Yancey, sociologist from the University of North Texas. He and his co-author, Alicia Brunson, recently wrote a book called Prejudice in the Press, Investigating Bias in Coverage of Race, Gender, Sexuality, and Religion. Now, you were giving the scenarios that how you did this. You put these scenarios together and had people in the media respond, George. And let's dig into some of those individual areas like race. What did you find, for example, when you brought up a variation in the race issue in news coverage?
Yeah. What I found was there really wasn't – well, first, for most of those scenarios, as far as whether they're going to cover the story or not, the switch didn't really matter. It mattered a little bit on race, but really not that greatly. As to the source story that was written – there was among some of our respondents in their opening questions talking about a concern of not appearing to be racist. And so it appears that, if anything, there's a little bit of deference to people of color, to whites, in the words of my respondents. And some of them actually talked about not wanting to anger activist groups. So one of our takeaways from from the racial element is that the activism that we see from some of the activist groups like Black Lives Matter, I think it actually has an impact on the coverage. You know, not a tremendous impact perhaps, but it probably does lend to more favorable coverage for people of color, at least at the margins. So there wasn't a great deal of difference, but where there was, it tended to be a little bit more favorable coverage for people of color. And we think some of that may have been tied to some of the activism we saw from some of the racial groups out there.
Okay. What about gender and sexuality? Because that's been a very hot topic with transgenderism, among other issues. So what scenario did you put together for that, or scenarios, and what'd you find?
Okay, now gender and sexuality, I separated those out.
Okay.
Gender, we're talking about men and women, just switching that.
Okay.
And there really wasn't a big difference with that. In fact, that one was probably the one where we had the least amount of an effect. There may have been some stereotyping of gender, but it wasn't that great, and it really didn't seem to disadvantage women more than men in general. The sexuality, though, was very interesting. That one, there was definitely, in the comments of our respondents, there definitely was a desire to support the interests of the LGBTQ community. There definitely was, you know, not wanting to harm them. In fact, one of our scenarios, we had a shooting, a couple being shot. And the couple was either an interracial couple or a same-sex couple. And if it was the same-sex couple that was shot, the respondents were more likely to be concerned about hate crimes than if it was an interracial couple that was shot, which is fascinating because, you know, the history of hate crimes really, if you think about hate crimes, the history of hate crimes, that really started in reaction to racial issues. But now what appears to happen is the media has taken that concept and applies it more to issues of sexuality than it does to issues of race. So that was a fascinating finding.
That
so
is.
there's really is a concern to be sensitive to the needs of sexual minorities from our respondents.
Okay. The last area you covered was religion. And I we've talked with people from the Faith Angle Forum, and they find, you know, when they're bringing these various journalists and press people to help them understand religion as overall and what various people believe. A lot of them come away, oh, we just didn't know that about this religious faith. And what are you finding when you did the study when it came to the area of religion and bias?
Now, we didn't, you know, we weren't testing their actual religious knowledge, obviously. But here we have, you know, perhaps our strongest effect in the negative direction. We had two really noticeable scenarios on this as it concerns Christians. One scenario was a church being shot up, and one scenario was Baptist church, and another scenario was Islamic mosque. Another scenario was that it was hate speech by a professor, and one professor made homophobic statements and another Christianophobic statements. And in the first one, what we found was that there's a talk of hate crimes with the mosque, but not with the church. The church, the focus was on the shooter and the gun. When it came to the professor of hate crimes, the focus when it was anti-Christian statements was on free speech, whereas when it was on homophobic statements, it was on hate speech and whether or not this person should keep their job. My conclusion, our conclusion, is that the interest of Christians per se is that media does not take into account the interests of Christians as a community. They may be sympathetic to an individual, you know, if an individual Christian was harmed or shot or something like that. I'm not saying that they would be callous towards that. But in the case of the LGBTQ community or Muslims, where they'd be concerned about Islamophobia or homophobia, media is not concerned about Christianophobia. They don't associate Christians with a group that could be hated. And I think that's an important fact for not just the media, but I think for cultural progressives in general, that that the same thing happens to a Christian, it can't be because of a hate crime, because I think they have a hard time associating hatred as something being directed as Christians, because they're seen as the majority group. And as you imagine, that could I mean, we know there's been shootings of churches where the notion of a hate crime doesn't even come up in the media coverage, whereas we know it would have. It has appropriately so when a Jewish synagogue or a Islamic mosque has been attacked. So I think that in some ways that's our most powerful finding.
Got about a minute left here. We're talking with George Yancey from the University of North Texas, and as you process through this book, George, and put it together with your co-writer, how has that adjusted your view of how you take in the news?
Well, I was, you know, pleasantly surprised that, you know, coverage of stories is not really affected by the principles of the stories, whether they're male, female, Christian, Muslim, whatever. But I really wasn't surprised by the religious findings, because I suspected all along that the media comes from people who are white, male, highly educated, maybe not wealthy, but progressive and very secular. And so I expect there to be some anti-Christian bias to be there. And the way I think it manifests itself is not necessarily a hatred towards Christians, but a neglect of some of the pressures that Christians may face because of anti-Christian bigotry and even hatred.
Okay. Well, George, I want to thank you for joining us. And for those who want to check out the book, again, it's called Prejudice in the Press, and it's currently out. George, thanks for joining us this morning on Faith Radio Mornings.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. It is 5 before the hour. Faith Radio Mornings, more in a moment. 4 before the hour. This is Faith Radio Mornings, and maybe you were concerned about romaine lettuce. I know for my family get-together during the Thanksgiving holiday, we couldn't have the usual salad we would have because there was no romaine. Well, good news. It looks like romaine will finally get back on the store shelves. They think they found, the FDA found where the problem was. It was an outbreak that, well, sickened 40 people in 12 states, but they found that the source came from the lettuce grown in California's Central Coast area. That growing season is over. Things are shifting to different growing areas, the Imperial Valley of California, Arizona, and Florida. So they think that things have been taken care of as far as the E. coli outbreak and romaine lettuce. So that'll be back on the shelf shortly, which is good news. Some other food-related news. Drinking soda may increase your risk of diabetes more than any other sugar-filled food. This was research done out of Toronto, and they basically tested various sugary foods for blood glucose levels. Soda really could spike things. Now, you're thinking of the sugar in, like, juice, and we've heard about that, where, you know, some pediatricians say don't give your kids too much juice because it could affect them. It has less effect than the soda. Still has an effect, but less. I, for one, if I'm going to have sugar, I want it to be with something else. I mean, you know, I'll do a malt, but I won't do soda. I love a malt because there's a little bit of protein, a little bit of fat, it balances out. But anyway, remember, today is Giving Tuesday. Great time for you to, after spending a lot of money, hopefully you have some left, to give to various ministries, whether it be missions, whether it be, well, your church or other ministries. Maybe consider giving to a minority-led ministry, which tend to be underfunded, but doing some great work. But whatever it is, make sure you give. Last year on Giving Thursday, $250 million was reported as being given during that time. And I'm thinking, gee, over the last few days, we spent probably, some estimates, over $50 billion on gift items and such. So that's a pretty small percentage. I think we can do better. Well, stay with us. Nicole Phillips joins us in just a bit to give us a kindness update. I think we need that this Tuesday morning. And then the doctor is in, Dr. David Stevens, with his medical update coming your way at about 10 past the hour. This is Faith Radio Mornings. Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.